You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you should have done. You should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't and it needed to be done, I know you got it done and you did it safely. You wore your mask. You gloved up if you had to, if you needed to. You kept your distance. You've done it safely because all throughout this country and in parts of this planet, the coronavirus is raging. And raging because of a lot of stupidity, particularly here in this country. So, but anyway, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for at the top of the page, look for podcasts, click on that. And the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Monday, this evening, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahad Ahmed. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. That is followed by from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lathy of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Black Reality Think Tank on Tuesdays from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and my dear sister, Sister Benisiwa. Melanin Live at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9 on Thursday. And if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, Sankofa, the Elders Council. And then on Sunday, from 7 to 9 on Sunday, Time for an Awakening is once again happening on Sunday at 7 p.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com, it's the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. And remember, WeBuyBlack.com is asking for donations. They've already raised, I believe, 400,000. They need 1.3 to develop a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. That's right. Of all these folks here and all the money that's supposed to be here, we don't own a damn supermarket. We don't own nothing. They ain't even a gas service station, convenient. But there's plenty of barbershops and all that kind of good stuff. But yeah. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bamani Tahimba, he is back from Tanzania with a lot of pictures and videos he's putting up on YouTube. Remember, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bamani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, and they are up from his just recently returned from Tanzania, youtube.com/Bamani2007. He will be my guest this Friday.
Brother Bomani will be my guest this Friday. The upcoming tours he has is December, and this is still on, December this month, December 24th to January 5th, going to Ghana. And then you got Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd through the 12th of next year. And then Ghana again, May 24th to June 4th. And the one I definitely will be going, Tanzania, November 18th through the 29th. November 18th through the 29th, going to Tanzania. And, of course, just a $400 deposit. There are three. All these trips I just mentioned are $3,700. $3,700. But Brother Bomani will be on this Friday. So, please, if you get a chance to listen and, of course, call in to find out, you know, all the particulars for you to take a trip of a lifetime. Renoko Rashidi, my good brother Renoko, his trip, which had been earlier this year, is now, which was supposed to be January 21st through the 4th of February, is, of course, October 5th through the 16th, going to Uganda and Rwanda. His trip is $4,200. He has a trip going to Kemet. He has a trip going to Kemet. That is going to be August 1st through the 14th. August 1st through the 14th, going to Kemet. And, of course, the October 5th through the 16th, going to Uganda and Rwanda. If you want to give Brother Baba Renoko a call, give him a call at 323-803-8663, 323-803-8663, or go online to drrenoko.com, drrenoko.com. Habashah, habashahincorporated.org, the brothers and sisters are doing the work. Habashahincorporated.org, they are a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. The programs that they have, of course, is Habashah Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, the Urban Green Jobs, Habashah Incorporated, Nakashi Project that is well underway, the Nakashi Project in Ghana. The buildings are up and so forth. I'm going to try. I've been saying that I'm going to try to get somebody from the Nakashi Project to come by and talk about it. Of course, I had the people from the Ledge Group, the Land for Environmental Development of Group Economics, the Ledge Group. They have been on, and they are doing outstanding work on the continent. And, of course, the Ledge stands for, once again, Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics, and they're dealing with food, water, clothing, and shelter, the basic needs. There are over 12 projects in six different countries, 172 people employed globally, and over 260 members need more members. They need more members, brothers and sisters. Should become a member of the Ledge Group. Could be buy some of that land that's in Africa. Believe me, it's important. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar here in the West End. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. And the Medu Bookstore in the Green Bar Mall, Mama Nia, beautiful sister, give her a call at 404-346-3263. They have a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, you name it, they have it right there for you at the Medu Bookstore in Greenbrier Mall. And my good brother Gazimde Ajamu at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. That is east here of here. That's east of Atlanta, here in the Atlanta area, metro area. And the number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us lifting us. Their Thursday night broadcast. Broadcast over Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. But if you want to call just to listen or call to make comments, questions, or concerns, you dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us lifting us, the economic development cooperative for our people. From 9 to 10 every Thursday night, 9 p.m. to 10 every Thursday night. Sister Gabrielle is doing outstanding work in Haiti. Sanjay-Haiti, she sends me beautiful pictures of the donations that I've given and how they're helping in Haiti, in the northeastern portion, in the rural area, in the hills of Haiti, a great program dealing with education, health care, entrepreneurship, sustainable agriculture. Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay-Haiti. And the Akaben Institute, Mama Baruti and Baba Baruti, outstanding work of educating our young warriors. Akaben Institute. Make your check of money order out to Akaben Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akaben Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But if you want to use PayPal or Cash App, like Cash App is $YAA, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, you can make your cash donations that way on a consistent basis to support the outstanding work that they are doing, and they're so desperately needed. And you know it, I know it, okay? So stop it. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Enye Sesem. You know, with everything's changed. Maybe I need to stop by Mama and Baba Baruti's and pick up the new edition of the Enye Sesem so I can have it ready on January 1. I'm looking forward to it. But, you know, believe me, if you have the Enye Sesem, it is important to read every morning to get your spirits going, get that African warrior spirit going. But believe me. December 6th, they owe us more than they could ever pay. They stole our language. They stole our culture. They stole our mothers and fathers and took our names from us. Queen Mother Moore. What would be the fair market value for others for a 1,000-year assault to our spirits, our minds, bodies, and land? And at what point will we grasp that reparations are due us from every people who worked to exploit and destroy us? The Arabs, our first and still in captors or enslavers. The Chinese, who fueled this early Arab enterprise. The coloreds in every African nation who served the alien invaders and remained the dominant economic force, those from the so-called Middle East and Asia today who stealthily enter our communities and now use us as the European Jew did, as doormats to rise in their anemic capitalist system. The European Jews themselves deposed overseers of Africans internally colonized here. And the European nation as a whole, which rose only because we fell, subject to their deceit, avarice, and inhuman violence. When will we recognize that these people are master liars, and therefore no apologies should even begin to be considered? Nothing short of a serious, empowered threat would compel any of them to return what they have continued to steal from us. More importantly for them, in a world where those who ask without power can be perpetually placated or ignored without reprisal, would they be left with anything if they return to us in today's currency? What they unquestionably owe, and they owe. Say, affirm, I demand commensurate compensation and reparations. Affirm, I demand commensurate reparations. December 7th. The secret to life is to have no fear. I repeat, the secret to life is to have no fear. Kwame Nkrumah. It is our fear which lets the European corrupt our children's minds. Having created us in their minds, they know our fears and use them to force us to relinquish our children unprotected to their insanity. And they know well how to corrupt them. They know that all it takes is one perverted image, one loaded word, one twisted thought to start the process. They know that if they can implement an image or a word when the child is young enough, it will find fertile, even gray matter. Find fertile gray matter in which to take root. And while it may not immediately come to dominate his or her thought, it will hold its own until the mind is exposed to more corruptive thoughts as life goes on. It's like the cells of alcohol. It's like the cells of alcoholics who no longer drink. If they ever drink again, they more easily return to the bottle because the earlier alcoholism was powerful enough to permanently mutate the structures of the cells so that these cells would forever be more receptive to and greedily seek out the taste of alcohol in their blood. Only those retaining their sanity without fear can prevent this assault. Only those retaining their sanity without fear can prevent this assault against the minds of our children. Nothing else would be reasonably or sufficient. Affirm, because I have my African sanity, I am without fear. Affirm, because I have my African sanity, I am without fear. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. All right. My good brother, my good friend, Brother Michael Holt, are you with me?
Yes, brother. I'm here.
Hey, my brother. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm too blessed to be stressed, as they say.
Okay. Well, listen, I tell you, I have a lot of good, fond memories of you. You know, I remember when you got the job or came home from Nam way back in the day and you started with the Community Journal. How long you been with the Community Journal now?
Man, you want to mention it? This is 43 years.
43 years, man. I love it. That's great.
I've been blessed.
Yes, you have.
That I have never worked for a white man.
I know that's right. That's a lot that a lot of us cannot say, brother, that you have always worked for us and for us. You have worked for those you work, but you have worked for us. Your commentaries, your perspectives. I mean, I watched Charlie Sucks because of you, because I didn't like Charlie Sykes at all. But every Sunday morning, man, you know, it was part of my Sunday ritual, man, to watch you, you know.
I take credit, those who don't know Charlie Sykes, you know, he's a national.
Yeah, he is.
Pundit.
Yeah, national conservative pundit.
NBC. Mm-hmm. You know, he used to be on Fox, though.
Yeah.
And I take credit. See, I finally brought him over to the black side because even though Charlie's conservative, you know, he jumped out there and denounced Trump.
Yeah.
Early.
Early. He did.
Early.
Yes, he did.
Called him a schoolyard bully. Mm-hmm. And the conservatives turned on him because of that. Called him a rhino or whatever.
Okay.
And he stood by his guns. And what people don't know is, you know, Trump's first appointment to the Supreme Court, you know who was on the final list up until that point? Diane Sykes, Charlie Sykes' wife.
Wow.
And she lost that position because of his opposition to Trump.
Oh, okay.
That's the way the rumor mill has it, because, you know.
Yeah, he chose Gorsuch. Gorsuch was the one that sent it. Oh, man, okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so.
You doing your intro, you was mentioning the trip coming up to Senegal. You know, my first sojourn back to the motherland was to Senegal and Gambia, and it was an eye-opening experience. Me and my late son, mm-hmm. you know, one of your mentors,
Listen, I thank you once again for honoring me to pour libation at his memorial. He was I'm still a little upset he beat me in that football game, though, because he kicked my ass.
Pure athlete. Football, basketball.
Yes, he was.
Basketball. 5'7" to get a basketball scholarship in college. So that should tell you
he's
something.
He's a tough dude.
And he and I were the first father and son to win the state karate championship belt in our respective divisions. Pure athlete.
Yes, he was.
But more importantly, you know, he was infused with everything that we had to offer. You know, he was part of a rite for passage that included you and
Teju,
so
all
many
of us.
Brothers. you know, Brother Rogers, you know, et cetera. You know, and part of that process was when I took him to Africa, and one of the most eye-opening experiences, and you should tell the audience this, you know, those who consider going to Senegal, that the most eye-opening experience was when we visited Gori Island.
Right, that's right.
And I don't know if people know about Gori Island. Gori Island is where they took the captive Africans. It's a little island off the coast of Senegal. And the experience was cultural, but it was also spiritual. Mm-hmm. You know, because on the top of that little island, on the top of the hill, was this Catholic church. And we had to realize that, you know, this must be a different God that they're worshiping, because they kept our brothers, our ancestors, in the most atrocious, horrific conditions known to mankind. Yeah. They had little dugouts that were like 3 feet high and like 3 to 4 feet wide. And the slaves, so-called slaves who resisted, were put in those little things. They put them in little rooms where there were so many people crammed into a small little room that if you fell to the ground, you died from suffocation. But the key is that the inhabitants, many of the inhabitants on Gori Island today, who maintain it as a museum, which, believe it or not, was paid for by Stevie Wonder.
Oh.
Many of the inhabitants there today are the descendants of sisters who were raped by these vicious Spaniards and Portuguese, you know, and they now inhabit that island. You know, when you study our history, the true history of what has been done to us, you know, you talk about the Maafa. What has been done to us is like no other people on this planet has been as victimized as Black folks.
That's right.
And then the final chains are still around our minds because we don't realize.
Yeah.
You know, so many of us don't realize our history because it's not taught. They give us his story and tell us that's true history. You know, I'm working on starting the research on a book where I will rank the best and worst presidents. And this idea came from a stupid comment from Joe Biden, who said that Donald Trump was the first racist American president. Biden was either a fool or just spoke out of turn.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can start from the very beginning. You know, most of the presidents were racist.
Right.
And they said it. Lincoln was a racist.
Yes.
Read his 1858 speech where he talked about how in fear, you know, slaves should be free, he said, but they should never be able to intermingle with white folks because they're inferior creatures and they definitely shouldn't get the vote.
Right.
Our people just don't know the true history. You know, I don't even know how to rank them at this particular time, but I would, you know, I'm going to start with Andrew Johnson, who succeeded Lincoln, you know, as president. Andrew Johnson was not Lincoln's first VP. He was the compromise VP for the second term because he came from the South. And he was a slave owner and a racist and a bigot. And Lincoln brought him in there to get some Southern votes.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as Lincoln was assassinated, you know, this fool went there and just, he killed 40 acres and a mule and killed every black living soul around. He just totally turned upside down Reconstruction and led to most of what we know now as Jim Crow and everything else. Oh, brother, I didn't mean to get on this tangent.
No.
You started me up.
Okay, well, listen, I know you have, there's a number of ways that we can go. We mentioned, we might talk about, do Black Lives Matter to us? And that's a good topic, but I mean, even what you're on right now, we can roll with that for a minute. We got till 12 o'clock your time, you know, and I appreciate whatever amount of time that you can give. And definitely, man, this is a pleasure for me, Brother Mike, no doubt.
Anytime, bro. Anytime. You know,
because, you know, like I said, I remember way back in the days and some of the things that we did and things that were happening in Milwaukee, our conversations and so forth, man. I tell you, the Milwaukee Community Journal, the Milwaukee Courier, and the Milwaukee Times, three American African newspapers in the city of Milwaukee. And of the three, I've always prized yours to be, you know, your paper to be probably the best and to give the best commentaries, you know, and features. So, but hey.
Yeah, I appreciate, you know, when we started, you know, I had a kind of a different vision. And we started in 1976. I had somewhat of a different vision. So we started with a weekly Africans Perspective page.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to bring, you know, as you said, you know, it was Vietnam that came back from the war,
mm-hmm.
you know, waiting on a revolution that never happened. And, you know, my whole vision, my worldview had changed, mm-hmm. you know, by going through that process. Because, you know, the only time I truly felt totally safe, and I know this might sound like an oxymoron, but only time I ever truly felt safe was in Vietnam. Because I never, during my entire tour, passed another brother who didn't acknowledge me.
Right on. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There was a sense of brotherhood and protectiveness, you know, and camaraderie that I never felt before or since. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. we had a lot of great black folks in Milwaukee, part of the struggle, you included. But, you know, we were always, you know, even now, we sometimes go certain places and we look over our shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, but there I knew that the brother had
your
had
back.
My back.
Had your back, right on.
You know?
Yeah. 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 And well, you know, that's the thing about America. America is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And majority of the people have that mindset. And unfortunately, majority of our people have that mindset. You know,
I'm an
individual. Yeah. Whitewashed. You know.
Yeah, you got that right.
So, you know, so we don't think about, you know, community. We don't think about coming together and pulling resources and doing for self. We don't think about those things. You think about what's in it for me. How can I get mine? How can I get over? You know, in fact, the mindset is such that they're saying, well, if you didn't get yours, it's your fault because I got mine.
Right.
Not understanding it is the system itself. It is this very system itself that is so damn corrupt, you know, which causes us to behave and act the way that we do, you know. Because, you know, yeah. When you talked about does Black Lives Matter, you know, to us, and, you know, right away I'm thinking, you know, unfortunately, no. You know, it should. You know, that's the number one person that these lives should matter to us. But we've been trained to hate ourselves. We've been trained to kill ourselves. We've been trained to disrespect and diss ourselves, our men, our women, our children. We turn them over to the European for their miseducation, you know, so.
Yeah, I just posted something, you know, Malcolm said only a fool would allow his oppressors to educate
mm-hmm.
his children. And that is so true because, you know, I've been involved in education from the onset. You know,
right.
I served many proud years
yeah.
on the Arambe Community School Board, you know, mm-hmm. Which was an Afrocentric curriculum based, you know, I think you added some components
yeah.
to it. Taki with the late great
yeah. Taki
Raton did,
yeah.
et cetera. And we, you know, we need that foundation, you know, in terms of schools totally controlled by black folks. There's, mm-hmm. you know, there's only a handful left.
Yeah.
You know,
nationwide.
When you look at it, yeah, you look at it, Howard Fuller is now Howard Fuller Academy. Used to be, you know, have a different name. They just changed the name in honor of Howard Fuller, who's one of the founders. They get a 100% college acceptance.
Where is Howard Fuller's Academy at?
I was right there in Capitol.
On Capitol, on
right
what?
On Capitol, like on what would that be? Right off Capitol and where Hopkins intercepts over there.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Right there on, okay, yeah. It doesn't look like a school. It used to look like an office building or a factory. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he was looking to expand because he you know.
Wasn't that cornerstone? Not cornerstone, but it was something else. I remember it was something else. I did some work there. Tony Courtney used to teach there.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that's
and he still goes through as a cultural advisor and stuff.
Okay, cool.
You know, the interesting thing is, you know, I've been working with this group with Mac Weddle and some of the folks that you know, former North Division alumni, et cetera.
Okay.
And we've been trying to take over North Division. And, you know, which North Division is...
So it's a huge building, man.
It's probably the premier, or used to be the premier black school, what we call a black school. You know, I attended there only one semester, but, you know, my senior year, actually, you know, we had ceiling tiles falling down and rats running around.
Yeah.
It was totally segregated, so they said. But it empowered us. Congresswoman Gwen Moore came out of that. General Colcroft came out of there. Howard Fuller came out of there. The head of the Urban League came out of there. I mean, I can just give you list upon list.
Sure.
You know, Howard Fuller, who was, you know, the head of the Black Alliance for Educational Options National Organization. We were also superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools for a while. But he cared too much about the kids, you know, about the young black kids too much, so they had to, you know, to get rid of him because he put kids over politics and and the agendas of the teachers union. But that school has grown to the point where it needed to expand. So Howard approached the school board and the board of directors about taking over and merging it with North Division, because North went from the best school. Today, North Division has the lowest graduation rate. None of the kids are proficient in math or science or reading. I mean, it is just a shame on our community, and that was intentionally done by the school board. Anyway, it was... they had moved towards merging them, and then Fuller's board turned around and said, no, we don't want nothing to do with NPS. I coined a new phrase, maybe you can adapt. I don't call them public schools anymore. I call them government schools because they're run by government and controlled by a teachers union who has as a priority the miseducation and undereducation of black children.
Yeah,
that's my personal perspective.
Right, while they
and
continue.
I think the evidence... the evidence bears it out. I'm a strong supporter of school choice, worked on it early on, and will continue to my dying day. So anyway, so this group of alumni came together and said, we need to just take over the school, you know, and run it, have an autonomous board. We've been fighting for the last 2 years about this, you know, trying to take over this school that is where most of the kids are failing. To give you an example, the graduating class from 3 years ago, because one of the brothers, the valedictorian, is a part of our committee, of the graduating class of this black school in the heart of the central city, only 10 kids were accepted into college out of an entire high school. 10 brothers and sisters. Six went to college. All six had to take remedial education.
Yeah.
1 year later, only three of those young, brilliant minds, including the valedictorian and salutatorian, were still in college. All of them had to take remedial education.
Mm-hmm.
And then the union would stand there and block any kind of reforms. Any kind of reforms. You know, and that's what we're battling in here, you know. You know,
Mike, I was there when that battle was going on and raging, and I did some work at North and a number of other schools on my off day as a firefighter.
Yeah.
You know, I would go into the schools and talk to, in fact, I used
and
to
how
always.
How long ago was that, bro? We're still fighting this battle.
Yep. Yeah, because that's a long time. I've been here in Atlanta now 6 years, so, and I haven't been doing that. In dealing with schools, I would say I left the fire department in 06, probably maybe about 10, 12 years ago now, easy, you know. Mm. And, but yet the conditions are even worse today than they were, you know, some years ago. You know, that's a damn shame.
You know, and, you know, that's where a lot of my emphasis is, mm-hmm. now on in my column, signifying, you know, I'm constantly challenging, you know, and there's always a few Negroes trying to snip at my heels, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I was blasted because I was telling folks, you know, the solution to our plight as African people living in America is not one of these political parties, which are essentially different wings on the same bird. You know, I voted for Biden, but, you know, that was really like the lesser of two evils. I know Biden's history.
Yeah.
You know, you know, and I know that the Democrats, you know, want to keep us happy in our misery.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans just want us to be in misery. I use the analogy that the Democrats come up with all of these programs, not to empower, but to placate. Mm-hmm. You know, they give us a few crumbs here and give us some energy assistance and that kind of stuff. They give us just enough so that we can afford to go and be ripped off at the renter centers, you know, where you pay $10,000 for a $200 television. And the Republicans own the renter center. It's all the same family. And we're confused by this. We think our salvation is coming from, you know, actually, and what the Democrats won't tell you is the black vote went down.
Mm.
It went down last month.
You mean the number or mean
numbers of black folks who voted went down, and the number of black folks who, for reasons I can't understand, who voted for Trump actually went up 50%.
Yeah, I saw that, because instead of the 4-5% they got the last in 2016, he got a damn near 8%, damn near 10%. This guy,
right.
Particularly American African males. That's
right.
Crazy to me.
I think some of it has to do with
Kanye West? No.
Well, no. You know, I call him Kanye East, because he's conning all of y'all to go east to the rising sun where you'd be blinded. But I think some of it had to do with apathy. Some of it, I think, had to do with just frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Because we really don't see progress politically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Barack Obama was, you know, I mean, I love the brother. But the reality is he was the CEO of a corporation that does not view us as being
right.
equal to anybody else.
Right.
So black poverty rate went up under Barack Obama.
Yes. And so did mass incarceration. A lot of social ills became more profound during his 8-year administration than previous. And but to
not
me,
to say that, I mean, it was his fault, but that's the system he was trying to operate from.
Exactly. You know, and he does. And I always said that any person who runs for the presidency or ascends to the presidency of the United States of America, you know, that person will do the bidding, whether they're male or female, American, African, Caucasian, Indian, Hispanic, whatever. That person will do the bidding of what's supposed to be happening in this country. You know, no, you're not going to be a staunch advocate for the poor. You're not going to be doing things to help those who are in need. No, you're going to do the bidding of what happens here. And what happens here, this is about capitalism. This is about a small group of individuals and families that have every damn thing at the expense of everybody who don't have a damn thing. You know, it's ridiculous,
right.
man. Because when you look at other countries, particularly so-called Western countries, how they dealt with this pandemic and how they helped alleviate problems with their citizens, they gave them decent stipends or stimulus checks or whatever the hell you want to call them. They allowed them to do a number of things. They definitely didn't allow them to be on the threat of being homeless or being evicted, you know?
Yep. But that's what I tell you about them Democrats. They just give us just enough to get a little comfort in our poverty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watch all this stuff popping up now about take out a loan for Christmas. I mean, this is all part of that system you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Of all the things in the world, what would you be worried about? Number one, you should be focused on the Kwanzaa. But beyond that, you know, it's this mindset. You know, who it is that said you ain't going to worry about a brainwashed slave, because if it's not a back door, he'll find one.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I'm focusing this you know, this last quarter of my life on education, because we must educate. You know, my late son Malik, you know, when he died in a car accident, you know, I spent the rest of that school semester teaching.
Teaching his students.
It was a charter school
run by
Ron Johnson.
Right.
So Ron and I got together, and it was for the kids and me. You know, we both needed healing.
Yeah.
So, but Malik taught the way I raised him. His kids called themselves the kids of Kemet.
Okay, right on.
And people don't know how I did it, but I stood there boldly and proclaimed at the end of the school semester, any of y'all want to go to college, you know, I'll give you a jump start and give each of you a scholarship. I don't even know how I did it to this day. But 23 of those kids went to college, and each of them got a $1,000 scholarship.
Right on.
I begged, borrowed, and stole. And then we kept it going for another year. You know, but these kids had a self-awareness. You know, they knew who they were.
Yes.
You know, a lot of folks don't even know what Kemet, you know, was. You know, you talked about it in your opening. But these kids viewed themselves. Matter of fact, brother, I just found out. And I know you ain't gonna bother nothing. But you know, I had two of those DNA tests done.
Okay, yeah.
23andMe, and then I had African ancestry. If y'all really want to find out where you come from in Africa, go to African ancestry.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So I had both of them. Matter of fact, I did the 23andMe because I was listening to this sister, Karen Hunter.
Yeah.
Dynamic
right.
sister on Sirius. And she was talking about this 23andMe, so I went and got it done. And it said, you know, my people came from, you know, through Nigeria to the Ivory Coast, etc. And I said, cool. But it didn't answer my questions. I posted it, a column on it, and the folks from African Ancestry read about it and gave me a free DNA.
Oh, right on.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
And they confirmed what the first one said, but they also said that both my paternal and maternal parents originated from Kemet, and that in my veins flows the blood of Ramesses II.
Oh, I say, oh, right on, man.
You know, I had to go over and look that up. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, I tell you.
You know, he had about 200 wives, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he had 1,000 kids, man.
Hey.
Yeah, Ramesses.
And they were killing each other to take over.
Ramesses wasn't no joke, man, that's for sure. Look at Abu Simbel. He built on a grand scale. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. 18th dynasty. We're going to take a break. I'm going to take a break now, and then when we come back from the break, we're going to take some calls. A number of people are on. If you are on, if you want to have a question or a comment to Brother Michael Holt of Milwaukee Community Journal, you can hit ## on your phone, or you can hang up and call back, or I could just acknowledge you, and if you just want to listen, you know that's good too. All right, brothers and sisters, once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Man, to be paid back. some get back. Payback. Payback. I'm ready. I can dig snapping.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here, now, of course, that was James Brown, the big payback. You know that's what we want, the big payback. You know, that's a deep thing because that's the fear of Caucasians that they will that we will do to them what they've done to us. We don't give a damn about doing nothing to them. We just want them to leave us alone and let us do our thing. Let us come together, pull our resources, and do for self. Damn it. On Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., this program, African Perspectives, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Cambon and her daughter, Nataki Cambon. Then that's followed by from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with host Chief Lance Jones and Sister Bonisiwa, my good friend Sister Bonisiwa Ayan. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the elders of the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday from 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Sunday. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Once again, my guest, of course, is Brother Michael Holt of the Milwaukee Community Journal, a staunch advocate for the education. And now he's been on that. Because when did you write your book, Brother? That was in the 90s? Was that in the
90s? Yeah.
Wow.
You know, we're about to hit the 30th anniversary.
Wow.
And the book is Not Yet Free at Last.
Yeah. Not Yet Free at
Last. And it's about the chronology of the school choice movement in Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
which has actually started a national revolution.
Right. It did.
Educational revolution where black folks are talking about black empowerment through education, mm-hmm. and are controlling the educational system through our dollars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been a lot of misinformation about school choice. You know, the unions, you know, my book was banned in certain places. I remember going to a book signing in San Francisco, and the teachers union shut it down because they didn't want people to hear the true history of school choice. But, you know, Milwaukee, at one point, the educational system, which is not that much better today, but the educational system was so bad that black activists got together and were trying to carve out a separate black school district,
mm-hmm.
where we would educate our own.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that, it actually passed the state assembly, and the governor said he would sign the bill, but the teachers union intervened,
mm-hmm.
And they got it killed in the Senate. After that, and this is the true history that you can find in this book if y'all want to look it up. I'm starting to update the book right now. But the true history of school choice, what they call vouchers, is in Milwaukee, it was started. I was on the board of Arambe Community School, and we had other excellent black-controlled schools like Urban Day, mm-hmm. et cetera, and Hispanic schools like Bruce Guadalupe. And the superintendent of the Milwaukee Public Schools, what I call the government schools today, name was Robert S. Peterkin, a brother from the East Coast.
Yep, Peterkin.
He called a meeting of representatives of these black schools. And we were poorly financed, and we had to struggle just to keep the doors open and stuff. But we were graduating, you know, our children, African children, who excelled.
Yes.
And so he asked, would we be interested in working on a public-private partnership? that was the seeds of school choice. He actually had a state representative craft some legislation to create a school choice program in which we would maintain our autonomy, but the money that would normally go to the government schools would be redirected to us.
Okay.
Because what people fail to understand is it's all our money.
Yes, right.
The money ain't owned
dollars.
By the public school system. It ain't owned by the teachers' union.
Right.
The money is our tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And in most states, you know, education is paid for by state tax dollars, and then they get federal, you know, dollars as well, and then local property tax.
Mm-hmm.
This program would have redirected the state dollars to the schools. Okay. The program was advancing. I mean, the legislation was advancing, and then the teachers union got involved and they usurped it. They had some Democratic assembly people add in all these clauses. Like, number one, they had to have control of the curriculum. Now, we got an African-centered curriculum. Mm-hmm. Now, what are you going to replace it with? The failing curriculum that our kids are forced to undergo? So anyway, so eventually we backed away from it. That's when our educational Harriet Tubman, Polly Williams, who was a black Democrat, she stepped in and organized the parents. And then they came up with the original bill. It failed, but then she went back and organized us and brought us all together. I served as lieutenant for propaganda, you know, making people aware of what's going on.
That's
this
right.
We had Kia Courtney,
you
know, Howard, you know, all these people. And we created a school choice program that was based on the GI Bill, which in essence, when I got back from Vietnam, I got a voucher to go to college. Based upon my military service, I could go to Marquette, a private Jesuit university in Wisconsin, or I could have went to University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, a public school, as they said it. School choice is premised on that. We started with just a handful of kids and a handful of schools that were involved in the program. Today, there are only 40,000 children in this program here, sending their kids to where parents feel they will get the best education. You know, so all of this stuff coming from the teachers union and the Democratic Party, which has blocked it. Matter of fact, the NAACP.
Right, the NAACP. I remember
NAACP
them.
NAACP filed a lawsuit to
right,
stop
against it.
Because
yeah.
the president at that time, you knew him, Thelma Cheney,
yeah.
one of the first black police officers.
Yeah.
Thelma Cheney was the head of the NAACP in Milwaukee. And he told me, and this is in the book, I said, why would y'all be opposed to black kids getting a good education in a black school taught by black teachers? And he said, quote unquote, and this is in the book, I oppose it because it's segregation and anything all black is all bad.
Mm.
That was a statement from the president of the NAACP. So you can drop the Buy Black campaign y'all got.
Mm.
You know, you could drop the black colleges. You could drop the black banks because anything controlled by black folks, I guess, is all bad. We fought that and won.
Which is, which is ironic because Thelma Cheney started North Milwaukee State Bank.
Right.
Yeah. A black bank.
And I put
bank.
My money in there.
I did too, brother, as soon as I came on the
and
fire
a black
department.
Brewery, if you remember.
Yes, yeah. People's beer, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, but he was being used.
Yeah.
You know, I remember one time, Kwasi Mfumi, remember him? He was the national president of the NAACP.
Right.
There was this organization, ironically, the organization Barack Obama worked for, the Social Service Organization, the so-called Progressive Organization. They were trying to kill school choice. So they came up with these lies. We were controlled by conservatives and all this kind of stupid.
Well,
I just told
you know,
you the
I think,
truth of the matter.
Well,
you could look it up.
I think, because there were a lot of Republicans, particularly conservatives, that wanted the school choice program because, and this is my perspective, they wanted their children out of the local schools and to be able to put them in a private school that they could develop. You know,
yeah. Well, you know that was part of
with,
it.
With that money,
but from our perspective, they were the only helping hand at the time, And the school choice program was started only for poor children. So only people who affect were poor children. Now, they have raised the income limits now, but it's still for lower middle class. You know, rich folks can't participate in the program. So, you know, for us, it was about black empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Solely, we wanted to control the education of our children to make sure that they were successful. You know, so we had all of my boys have gone, you know, through Arambe Community School. Then they went to Mesmer, you know, Catholic schools. I'm not Catholic, but, you know, they had a sound education. You know, and the principal and the president were black, you know, et cetera. The only way that we are going to empower ourselves as a people is we stand on our history. We stand on a cultural foundation, and we stand on an educational foundation that we can control. Yeah. And the reality is, I can cite you statistics after statistics after statistics. Our kids nationally are failing in the government school system. You know, of course, you know, some of them make it through.
Yeah.
Some of them make it through anything. You know, I made it through the war. But the reality is, and black folks need to open their eyes to this reality, you know, y'all need to read Carter G. Woodson's book, The Miseducation of the Negro. I mean, y'all need to look at what Malcolm was saying, you know, and what Du Bois was saying. Go back to what Marcus Garvey was saying. We cannot control our destiny as long as other people control us.
Right.
And when they go to school thinking that George Washington cut down a cherry tree, George Washington, he might have cut down a cherry tree, but he also had his so-called captive slaves lined up. He didn't have wooden teeth. He actually had overseer pull the teeth out of his slaves to put in his mouth to make dentures.
Yeah.
Now, that's a far cry from the history that I was taught growing up. We need to empower ourselves through knowledge. It's a simple, simple equation. When we realize that it was our ancestors and through our veins flows the blood of the people who invented civilization and medicine, and then conversely, you get on the school board, you know, like, remember when we had the Malcolm X Academy, mm-hmm. was an African-centered school.
Yeah.
The school, the teacher union sued because we wanted all black teachers.
Yeah.
And they won. They won in the just us courts, you know, and so we couldn't even control that. And then we had a black school board member who said that we were teaching voodoo because Africans invented aerodynamics, flying kites. We weren't flying no jets 3,000 years ago, but we had a sense of aerodynamics, science, medicine, the whole ball of wax. But you get black
Leon Todd. And now Leon Todd, is that his son that is now going to be in charge of the Fire and Police Commission?
Yep.
That's what that is? Yeah, because when I saw that, I read that and said, Leon Todd. I said, Leon Todd, that dude, what are he going to be doing at the Fire and Police Commission? Then I saw the picture. I said, must be his son then. You know, because he looked Caucasian.
And I'm not, you know, denouncing his son. I don't know his son, you know, et cetera. But,
okay, I remember that. Yeah, I mean, you know.
I used to call him Uncle Leon.
Yeah, so. I'm hip. I remember he had a little debate with him and Malefi Asante at Claiborne's at the Wisconsin Black Historical Society. It was hilarious. You know,
and he hated it. He's one of the reasons why Howard Fuller resigned as superintendent of the Milwaukee Public Schools. Because he was blocking everything.
Yeah.
He had in his mind that somehow by sitting next to a white child, that's the only way black kids could achieve. Because some was supposed to rub off.
Yeah.
You know, integration was the solution to everything.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But see, that's the problem. You know, the perception is that what Caucasians have is always better and what you have is less and less than. And of course, the more closer you can get to Caucasians, the better it is for you. And so that mindset is still pervasive today, you know. But I'm down with you in the respect that we must control the education of our children. Our children need an African-centered education desperately so they can change the way they think. They can change their value system. They can change the idea that they got to have this and they got to have that, all this material stuff. They can begin to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed on us. You know, I always say that the Europeans have a vice grip on our minds. And you understand that, too. Once you set the vice grip, you can't pull it apart. You know, not even Hercules can just pull it apart. You got to turn that knob at the end of the handle. And turning that knob is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self. And the more that knob turns, the more knowledge you have of who you are. The tension on the vice grip is released. You open it up. And now you see them for who and what they are. Not that you challenge them, because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior, and then a damn thing you can say or do to prove them otherwise. Kick their ass to the curb. And what you do is, now that your mind is open, get with other like-minded people and begin to build, and begin to do for yourself, begin to educate yourselves. You know, develop that kind of camaraderie, develop a system. That's why I like the idea. I always like that idea which y'all had about taking over North Division, which is a hell of a venue, a building. That school.
Yeah, you know, it was created because, and just to give you an idea of how the system works against us, that's why I call it government schools. You know, I described early on, you know, the conditions of the school when I was going there. You know, ceiling tiles falling down. You know, we having classes so crowded. We had classes in the furnace room and all that kind of stuff. Rats running around, et cetera. You know, because of the conditions, the black community band together, got together and said, we want a new school. You know, build us a new school. Since you're going to segregate us anyway, give us something of quality. So that went through, and we finally forced the school board to do that. They built this fantastic facility in the heart of the central city, one block away from the old school, with an Olympic-sized swimming pool, a carpentry lab that was large enough to put a house in there, welding classes, and a medical and dental labs for those specialties, right? Mm-hmm. And you know what the school board did under Leon Todd then? They closed it to all neighborhood kids. They said it's going to make it a specialty
school. Make it a magnet.
And in essence, only white kids could go there. And then they moved the school a block closer to the expressway so that the white kids could get off the bus and wouldn't have to walk into the central city. I mean, it would still be in there, but they only have to walk a block or two. I mean, it's totally, totally ridiculous what they did. That was one of the sparks for the school choice movement, too, because Polly and Howard Fuller started the Coalition to Save North Division, and we forced them into opening it up to school again to our children. And then what they did was they made North a dumping ground. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is today. 40% of the kids have been adjudicated. They're walking around with braces around their ankles. You know, I just did some research to find out, you know, the way the school system is set up in Milwaukee, you know, parents can get they come up with a list, a priority list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, with number one being their top choice to get into school. You know, only 8 kids out of North Division made it their first or second or third choice. Don't nobody want to be there.
Yeah.
But we want to step in and try to take it over.
Yeah.
And we get all this resistance.
Yeah. And what was interesting, when I was working at North Division, I think at that time they must have had 2 or 3 schools.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. Going on at the same time, you know, and different, because, I mean, the building is huge. And so they had somebody in one corner on another floor and so forth, you know. And
the school was built for 2,000 kids. You know how many kids are in North Division right now?
About 300.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so we're fearful that, you know, some private missionary organization is going to come through and take it over.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to make it a charter, but we won't have no control over it.
Well, how is the new superintendent? It's a brother.
We met with him early on
uh-huh.
when he was the interim. And he seemed supportive. And then they gave him a raise and made him a permanent. And now all of a sudden, he wants to go another route. You know the old story.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's a bad brother, but, you know, I was just reading some statistics. You know, my most recent column, and I'm a post it. My most recent column, I talk about what is happening to our kids during this pandemic. And this is a truly horrific story that nobody's talking about. Well, mm-hmm. I'm talking about it. Well, but, you know,
the average black kid
is slipping through the cracks.
Yeah.
They're going to lose a full year. And how do they make that up? They won't be able to make it up. Milwaukee leads the United States of America, Cuba, the Caribbean, Central and South America. We got the lowest percentage of black kids in the United States of America who are proficient in fourth and eighth grade reading. Black kids in the world.
Yeah.
And they stand in blocking reforms. That's why we got school choice.
You know,
I mean, that's the reality. We got one of the Milwaukee, and, you know, I kind of envy you being down there. You know, Malik's son is down there. My brother's down there. You know, I kind of envy you because Milwaukee leads the nation in 7 negative social indicators.
Yeah.
This is a constant battle. We got the highest infant mortality rate in the world. We got black infant mortality rate. You know, we got the highest poverty rate. We got a 52% black male unemployment rate.
Yeah.
52%.
Yeah, it has been the worst place for us as African people, American African people, to live in this country for years. For years. I was surprised to see Minneapolis up there because for quite some time, you know, a lot of us left out of Milwaukee, out of Chicago, and went to Minneapolis. You know, that's why you had all them high yellow folks, you know, because of the Caucasian. I'm just being it real. I'm just keeping it real. You know, Prince and Apollonia, that kind of thing. Because even my brother-in-law, you know, he was a musician, and he left Milwaukee in the late 70s, early 70s, rather. Excuse me, early 70s, and went to Minneapolis, you know, and... Yeah.
But you know, like I said, brother, you know, people ask me why I'm still here, because I should be retired. I'm kicking in this last gear, you know, because somebody got to say it. As you know, in 2014, I was stricken with an illness where they were going to pull the plug on me.
Yeah, I
was in the hospital for 7 months.
Wow.
I was supposed to be dead. They said, the doctor said I was going to die.
Yeah.
No, matter of fact, they told my wife to pull the plug. They brought the family in, and they took a vote over whether or not to pull the plug. And one member of the family said, "Yeah, pull the plug." I still don't know who that was, but they were saying, you know, I wouldn't want to live as a vegetable.
Yeah.
You know, because all of my organs had shut down and stuff. And they thought I'd be brain dead. And anyway, you know, James Causey, the young brother who I've mentored, who's now an excellent columnist and writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote an article, see, and the title was called "One More Story to Tell." So he said it wasn't my time. I had you know, I had people. They did a prayer vigil. I had people from China.
Wow. Well, I tell you this.
Who joined in on that. I don't even know how these folks knew who I was. You know, but China, Japan, I mean, Africa, you know, the whole ball of wax, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody has to do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so your audience knows, you know, my legal name is Michael Quake Owose.
Right.
I kept the hope. Out of respect for my father, and he just died on Father's Day, so I'm debating whether or not to drop that.
Yeah.
It was Quake who will say.
Mm-hmm.
And because I went through the African rites of passage with a African priest from Ghana, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm trying to impart that. But, one of the last things I want to do in terms of education, as I said, you know, my son Malik, his kids call themselves the Kids of Kemet. I'm in the process now of trying to put together it's not going to be a mentoring organization. It's going to be an organization that will create a paradigm, a rites of passage paradigm.
Okay.
And it'll be called the Kids of Kemet in honor of my late son,
mm-hmm.
you know, who actually wrote a proposal for this, you know. he called it Educate by Example, where he was going to take young black successful brothers, you know, who are culturally and civically and spiritually minded, and create a paradigm so we can take them. So if we can't impact them through the government school system, we can create this. You know, one of the things in my research, I found out that, you know, the Boy Scouts, which now has this bad reputation and all this, everybody's suing and all this. But the ideal of the Boy Scouts came out of England. And it was created when a British officer in South Africa observed the rites of passages of the Zulus. So I'm going to take that paradigm and take it a step further.
Right on, right on. Well, everything, the root damn near of everything is us. But I want to mention what happened to you, because I was praying for you and Eugene Cain, who is another brother who was in media. And, I back in Milwaukee, as you know, brother, I was involved in a number of things, black firefighters, 100 black men, and so forth. So I knew the people in media. And you two were two who I respected and admired most, you know. And unfortunately, Eugene overcame his situation, and then he passed.
And he succumbed.
He succumbed. But
you know, we essentially had the same condition.
Okay.
You know, maybe it was in the water or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, and he was a dynamic brother. You know, it's a sad reality that Milwaukee is now a majority-minority city.
So yeah.
They say, you know, the black population is 42%. Then when you add the Hispanic population in it, we're the majority in the city.
Right.
But the real, real sad part of some of this is that I'm the only black columnist in the entire state of Wisconsin. And some folks hate my column.
Yeah.
You know, because I got this bad habit of telling the truth as I see it. You know, and I don't owe no allegiance to nobody. Tell folks up front, I'm not a Democrat, you know, or Republican. I'm a member of my own political party. There's seven of us. You know, I think the only way that we can, you know, really prosper is we create our own black political party that has as its sole interest our welfare and empowerment.
Yeah.
You know, they're different wings of the same bird to me.
Yep.
But, you know, I say that we should control all the institutions that affect our lives. You know, and that's been echoed from Mike McGee and you and other folks over the years.
That's right. We've always advocated that.
This stuff.
That's right. Listen, brothers and sisters, if you want to get in on this conversation, if you're on, hit pound. That'll let me know that you want to get in, or hang up and call back. So I'm not going to call on you if you don't want to be called on. So I know they got a number of people who are hanging out waiting. So hit pound, and you can have a question or comment from my good brother, Michael Holt. Otherwise, we'll continue the conversation. Well, let me just try one here. Let me see this brother right here. 414-507. 414-507. Good afternoon.
Hey, Brother Oshie.
Hey,
man,
what's that?
What's that?
It's LaRue Ned.
LaRue
Ned. You're on with Mike
Holt. When I first came here, I came to Milwaukee, and I was working for the other African-American newspaper, American-African newspaper, under
the Courier.
Matthew Staley.
Yep, Matt Staley.
And, and then, you know what, I had an opportunity. I wanted to mention his name, Larry Harwell.
Oh.
That dude was a genius, man.
Yeah, Larry Harwell. Yeah.
Man.
Triple O.
Man, and I worked.
Triple O.
Huh?
Triple O. That was his organization, Organization of Organizations.
Yeah.
And, of course, his work with
–
he did a lot of work with Polly. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was Polly's aide.
Yeah.
He was the actual architect of the school choice movement.
Thank you. Thank you. That's what I had to, and I had an opportunity to work under Larry, work under Polly, which made me work under Larry for a while, and we worked on that project, man. That was one of the best experiences I ever had in Milwaukee. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up about to mention Larry Harwell. Hey, but Mike,
yeah, bro.
Mr. Holmes, I think instead of talking about presidents and all of that, writing a book about presidents, you should write your life story and put it in a book, man, because this is one of the most informative programs I have heard in a while. And, man, that's what I wanted to suggest. Man, write your story.
Wow. it would be interesting, but you know, I was sitting here this morning, reading Claude Anderson's book, from 95, Little Dirty Little Secrets. I don't know if anybody's read that.
Right.
Y'all should, but it's an excellent book. And I had started doing research and then it stopped because I was down in Texas about a decade ago and I started talking to these brothers down in Galveston about some stuff. And they started telling me about the Battle of Fort Negro. Now, I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that. But Claude Anderson talks about that. And many people thought that, these escaped captives, the MIAs that white folks called slaves, all went north, to Canada in the north, which was just as racist as the south. But many of them went south down in Florida. And they actually miscegenated with the Seminole Indians. Mm-hmm. And it got so bad that they created their own little kingdoms down there. And one of the little kingdoms run by a brother who's only known as Garcia, he was brother, escaped slave, they put together a community that the plantation owners were so upset by, because they were doing Harriet Tubman stuff, bringing brothers down south instead of north. And so they called the United States Army to go down there and get them. And part of it ended up at this battle called the Battle of Fort Negro, which was like the Alamo. And they massacred, they repelled this Union Army and Navy. They sent the U.S. Navy up the rivers and stuff. And they bombarded this. And the brothers and sisters and children said, "We ain't going nowhere." And they'd rather die. And so they stood, to the very end, like the Alamo, fighting off. You know who this goes back to doing this thing on the presidents. You know who the head of the army was that massacred all these black people?
Jackson.
Andrew
Jackson.
Yep.
Andrew
and
Jackson.
That's one reason why I'm saying, mm-hmm. if you want to learn the history, maybe to somebody, my life would be interesting, Vietnam vet and, always, being on the fringes of organizations and, marching and Million Man March and all the rest of that. But I don't know how much time, people complain a little bit. Y'all can visit my column at MilwaukeeCommunityJournal.com. My column is Signified. Just pull up Signified. You can go through the archives.
Right.
I'm working on doing a book of some of my favorite columns over the last
That'd be great.
40 years.
That'd be great.
Some of which, and just to give you an idea, back in the 70s and 80s, we didn't have archives, electronic archives for these stories and stuff.
Yeah,
all we had was old papers. So what I started doing was I took a few of those columns because they had to be retyped and stuff, and I just changed a name or two and a date or two, and I did them in the last year. People don't even know the difference.
But that just goes to show.
The same struggle.
Exactly. That just goes to show. 30-something years ago, the same. I did a piece on the program, on my program a few weeks ago, that we are no better off than we were 50 years ago.
Yeah.
We are not. We're no better off than we were 50 years ago in a number of areas,
Exactly. Worse off.
Yeah. I agree with LaRue. That could be argued. We're worse off than we were 50 years ago.
Right after the Civil War, close to 80% of all of the black families were nuclear families. They were married. The first thing the brothers did after the Emancipation Proclamation was a joke. Well, actually, after the amendment that freed us. Well, the first thing they did was marry and had these intact families. It was close to 80%. Today, almost 80% of us, of our families, are single-parent households. Mm-hmm. So we've gone full circle, and I'm guilty of it myself, but because I remember a time that it was back in Milwaukee. I know you remember these days, Oshie, that it was me, you, Muhammad Sabir, and a couple other black men. We were all single fathers.
That's right.
Raising our kids.
Yeah.
And we took pride in that.
Yeah.
That at a certain age, particularly the boys, and you did it with a girl, but at a certain age, in our culture, the men become the parent. You know, mm-hmm. we take them, transition sure. these boys to manhood through
That's
the rites
right.
of passage.
You
and
got
stuff.
To.
Yeah, and, you know, so there was a group of us who were just these single male parents, you know, which is an oddity today. But, you know, like, I recall back in the day, and maybe the brother had something about, you know, doing some you know, my biography is written through these columns. So I just recently talked about what has the rites of passage morphed into. You know, when I was like 8, 9, 10 years old, my father used to take me down to the House of Joy Bar on 8th and Wright and sit me up on a stool while all the old men, all the brothers would play pool and talk crazy
yep.
and talk about history and manhood and all this stuff. And I'd sit up there with my little, you know, Pepsi Cola and stuff and listen.
Yeah.
That's like the fireplace.
That's right.
You know, like
or the barbershop
in Africa
yeah.
1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, you learn. We went through that whole transition, and it made, you know, it made me into who I am. You know, it prepared me for so much in life because I had those tales. You know, of course, the brothers always exaggerate and lie and all that kind of stuff, you know, make themselves. But, you know, but that was all part of it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have that sense, you know, of community today where, you know, the reason why I wrote that Black Lives Should it only matter if we're talking about what the police do to us and not what we're doing to each other? Did we get these brainwashed brothers? I wrote it because, you know, my son works for, and you know the organization, Oshie, Running Rebels, which is a youth-serving organization,
mm-hmm.
and they mentor these kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of my son, you know, my oldest son works for them, and he would bring these kids, these at-risk kids who get in a little trouble and stuff. He would actually take them a step further, you know, so he didn't just deal with them when doing the office hours or whatever. You know, he would link them and bring them over to the house and give them chores to do and take them to games and all this kind of stuff. So he brought this one little brother with him over the last 2 years. And I would talk to this brother about African history and who he was, you know, the whole ball of wax and how they distinguish between his story and history and who he could be and how he was the favorite child of Name, God, etc. And he became a part of our household.
Hmm.
He just turned 16 years old. A friend of his was murdered, and he went to this kid's vigil, and he gets killed in a drive-by.
Oh.
And nobody said a damn word.
Oh, wow.
You know, this is one sentence. One sentence in the daily paper. And I said, you know, and nobody, you know, it's become commonplace.
Yeah.
You know, we get record murders in Milwaukee right now. There's a killing, average of one killing every day. Black victim every day. And everybody, you know, I saw all these thousands of people out here in the streets, and these white folks too, out in the streets, these so-called progressives mm-hmm. and black folks, and they talking about Floyd. No, y'all need to focus more on cleaning up our own community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to really begin to visualize ourselves as a people, you know, and not as pawns. You know, we need to take care of our own. You know, when I was growing up in Milwaukee, yeah, this could be part of the story. When I was growing up in Milwaukee, we left the door open.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when the so-called riots happened. I was working at the Milwaukee Sentinel. You know, that's the only time I ever had a white job, and I was a youth, so I don't include that. You know, I was like 15 years old, got a job at the Milwaukee Sentinel newspaper, and the so-called Milwaukee riots happened. And, you know, the National Guard came and bordered off our community
right.
with tanks and trucks
right.
and military people with, you know, M14s and M1 carbines and all this kind of stuff. And we were dying. You know, all the food was gone and stuff. We couldn't leave there, the central city, where it was bordered off at. Family got together. And because of my ID from Milwaukee Sentinel, I was one of the only people in my neighborhood that can get through those barricades.
Mm.
And they came to get, I couldn't even drive except for the cars I used to steal back in the day. And somebody gave me the keys to their station wagon. And when I went through the barriers, and they think I'm going to work, I went on the nearest outside and filled up that station wagon with food that was, you know, that was purchased by the collective resources of everybody on my block. Right, and took it back, and we divided it equally. Yeah. So if you had a dollar, you still got your share. Yeah. If you could pay 50, you paid 50.
Mm-hmm.
That was community, though.
Yeah.
That was community. That's what we, you know, I see a lot of things happening during this pandemic, and maybe this is a spark. I hope it's a spark. But until we start viewing ourselves as being about a community and self-empowerment, we'll be glad to write my column in 100 years. It's going to be the same old BS.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the reality is that the same here in Atlanta and same all over. As you pointed out in your article, the pandemic has exacerbated the situation. You know, that's why there's a lot of uptick in homicides in other major cities as well, not just, of course, in Milwaukee. And, of course, Milwaukee has had its share over the many years, you know, of being up and down in terms of homicides and any other social ill. In fact, it's been said that the social ills there are more profound in us than anybody else. I remember working with Brothers of Kwanzaa, you know, with Brother Braxton, you know, in his program, you know, which is an excellent program, you know, and that should be in many other schools, Brothers of Kwanzaa, you know, and dealing with those indicators, trying to make sure that you know about it so you can do all you can to change the dynamic, you know? Because if you don't know and you continue to do what you do, you know, definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And, of course, it continues to happen, you know? So we as African people here, we're in a very precarious position, and our future is not guaranteed, you know. And when you look at the dynamics of what happens here in America, and particularly to us, it does not look good. It doesn't. And until we can, once again, as I just stated earlier, break this monopoly that they have on our minds, that not only is our liberation impossible, it is unthinkable, because a lot of us just cannot conceive or even visualize us working together.
Yep.
You know, because many people, I ain't seen it. And of course, all the other negative stereotypes about ourselves and how we can't do this, we can't do that, you know, and it will continue to persist. That's why.
But some of us are doing it. Fortunately, some of us are keeping that flame alive. You know, some of us are inspiring other, you know, younger folks to take the baton. You know, we got, you know, a cadre of young folks who, you know, who are keeping alive the dreams that we had.
Right.
You know, but you know, I think, you know, one of the things that happens to us as a people is, you know, I heard some people, you know, there was a whole bunch of black folks who thought that we had arrived and that everything was going to be okay when Barack Obama got elected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Donald Trump showed the world that was a fallacy. Now people are thinking, well, now, you know, Biden won. What does that mean to us? We got to look outside this political system and don't let these neck bones convince us that all of our problems are going to be solved by working within that system that they control.
Right.
You know, their deck, their cards. You know, we got to come up with our own.
Yeah. And it's always, and always has been, and always will be stacked against us. And that's just a fact.
And a lot of brothers are looking to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Well,
is the Renaissance supposed to be in Atlanta?
Yeah, well, stop it. Yeah, we ain't got a damn supermarket down here. You know, we try our best to get a supermarket. I haven't seen one American African owned service station in the city of Atlanta nor outside of it, because, you know, we live all over. You know, unlike Milwaukee, where we live in Milwaukee County. No, right. We live in, you know, because Atlanta itself is in five different counties. The majority of Atlanta is in Fulton. The next good chunk of Atlanta is in the DeKalb County. Then Cobb County, Cobb County, Clayton County, and what's the other one? Gwinnett. You know, a little piece of here and there, but the majority of it is in Fulton County. But the bottom line is, no, we don't have those things ourselves. And we have many brothers and sisters living here in cul-de-sacs, gated communities, subdivisions. And you would think of some of those subdivisions, it's all us, beautiful homes, manicured lawns. I'm quite sure they're immaculate on the inside, that they would say, hey, let's pull money together and let's build a strip mall just outside of here where our sons and daughters can have employment or where we can spend our money. And you know, when I first moved here, I was going to the clinic, a hospital that is not too far from where I, because when I moved here, I was living in DeKalb. I was living in Tucker, and I had some problems with my shoulder, a rotator cuff problem that I later found out, and of course, I had knee replacement. But in that area, a lot of Indians, and they have their shops, of course, the jewelry and that kind, but they built a strip mall. And in that strip mall, they got a sit-down restaurant, a takeout restaurant, a grocery store, a supermarket. They have a furniture store, clothing store, and, of course, jewelry and so forth. All those things right there for the Indians to take advantage of. And they have stores outside of there on Lawrenceville Highway. And I'm saying to myself, where is ours? Here in right. The so-called in Atlanta with all these black folks, where is ours? It ain't, you know.
Well, see, part of the problem is, that's why I say everything stems from education. You know, we have to educate. You know, there's a lot of black folks who think only white ice gets cold. Mm. They've been brainwashed. You know, integration, so-called integration movement destroyed a lot of black businesses. You know, if you recall, you know, when you left Milwaukee, you know, Milwaukee had three black banks.
Yeah.
That's unprecedented.
That's right. When I left, they did. They
had none.
Yep. They had
none.
Yep.
We had three black gas stations. Now we get one.
One. Diane.
I grew up in Milwaukee, had a black hospital, a black brewery. I mean, think of all of the black first we had here. But, you know, then integration 76 came, and they slowly but surely start, you know, convincing us that no, we can't buy black together. You know, or the quality is less, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's the same. It's the same thing. You know, Felmer's Cheney said, and Leon Todd, same thing they said. If it's all black, it's bad. You know.
And we fell for the okie doke.
Mm-hmm.
We really fell for the okie doke. You know, I see by black movements regenerating themselves today. You know, what little money I get is at a black savings and loan. You know, the black bank closed, and I'm now looking for One United. You know, we just use a black carpenter, you know, because we, you know, you had a rental property we want to sell. Mm-hmm. Use a black carpenter, a black electrician, a black plumber.
Yes.
We use a black everything.
Yes.
And the house is beautiful.
Yes.
And we found, and then one of the carpenters did a bad job, so we replaced him with another black carpenter who turned out to be a sister who was like fantastic. So I'm going to start promoting her.
Right.
You know, we got to get to this. You know, we got too many black folks. We had one black bad experience with a black business, and then they turn away. But you could be mistreated. I remember when Tae Ju and McGee and all of them, we did that boycott of Beauty Island, a Korean beauty supply place that where the owner knocked down a black pregnant woman. So black leaders came together and said, we're going to do a boycott.
That's right.
And we were parading in front of that business, stopping black folks from going in there.
Hey, Mike, you remember I was part of that too, right?
That black woman said, no, y'all ain't gonna stop me from getting
that's
my
right.
weave.
Yep, get my weave. I can save $50. I mean 50 cents. Save 50 cents.
So you can look like a white woman.
Yeah. Man,
you know, and then this is where our mind is. You know, they had the so-called riot in Philly and stuff, and they had, or was it Baltimore? and they were posting pictures of it. And I'm going online to get some pictures, and we could probably download for, you know, our paper here in Milwaukee and stuff. And one of the pictures is a bunch of Negroes breaking into a weave and wig shop.
Yeah.
I said, damn, break into a bank if you're going to do something stupid. Y'all, is your priority a weave?
Well, you know, there's a lot of sisters want that weave, and some of that weave is those pieces of hair. I know.
But see, I finally got over. I used to talk about sisters wearing them weaves and wigs. I got over it. Now I just look at it as hats. It's just a hat. It's a scarf.
Brother LaRue, you got anything else to add, man, before we close out of here?
Yeah, I don't know if it would do any good, but you know, we got fooled by the Emancipation Proclamation, and we thought we got free then. But everything, all the changes that were imposed on us under slavery are still with us to this day. And I'm wondering if we realize that we're still in slavery, would that help wake some more of us up? I just wonder.
Yeah, but and I wonder if our children will be taught that in the government schools. That's why I'm for black Afrocentric schools, you know, because, you know, that was a joke. The Emancipation Proclamation, you know, people think that Lincoln, you know, number one, Lincoln was a racist. But matter of fact, the brothers in at the University of Wisconsin in Madison tore down a Lincoln statue.
Oh.
So some of them are starting to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Emancipation Proclamation, number one, it didn't free the slaves in the northern states. That's number one. Number two, it was done for military purposes. You know, and people don't fully understand, you know, how that turned everything. You know, and number three, it was illegal. That's why they came up with the Constitutional Amendment, because according to Constitution and international law, you could only take contraband, and that's what we were considered. You can only take contraband from a foreign nation. So in order to free the slaves, take their contraband, the South had to be considered a foreign nation. And that's what the Civil War was about. They were not a foreign nation. That's why we need our history, the true history, to empower our people. And then once you understand that and understand that slavery ended except for the prison system, you can still enslave people under the prison system. That's why there's this pipeline to prison. Yeah, we got to wake up, bro. We got to wake up.
Yeah, well.
And Mr. Michael, if I want to get in touch with you, how do I do that?
I'll give you my email address. It's Malik, which is my son's name, named after Malcolm. Malik, M-A-L-I-K, P-R, at Mac, M-A-C, .com. Otherwise, you can reach me through the Milwaukee Community Journal. You could visit us online at MilwaukeeCommunityJournal.com or Michael, M-I-K-E-L, at MilwaukeeCommunityJournal.com.
Thank you.
Read that column, brother. Signify it every week.
Oh, Signify it. Yeah, always. Give him that email address again, brother.
Michael, M-I-K-E-L, at MilwaukeeCommunityJournal, all one word, .com.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
All right, brother. Yeah, we only got a few more minutes. I really want to thank you, brother, for spending this time. And what I like to do is, of course, get you on a few more times, and best, especially where we can break down one of your signifying, you know, let that be a focus, you know, because you have written some really insightful articles on things that are happening with African people, not just locally, but nationally and internationally, you know.
Oh, yeah, brother. Any time for you, bro.
Yeah.
You were my role models, bro. You among those few who has walked a straight path. and stayed on it.
Yeah, well,
which is hard to do, bro.
It is. Well, you know, I made a commitment to myself to be an African. I fell in love with Africa and Africans, and that's where I am, and that's why I know that I'm trying my best to help us understand it as well, because that is our salvation, that is our future. Because if we don't embrace it, the model of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die, because that's the situation that we are in, and it's global, you know. So I do my best to every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. or 10 to 12 Central to put that information out there and discuss it. Hopefully somebody can understand it. We all can understand it. Or somebody got some good information that I don't have, please share it, that we can begin to disseminate this information. Hopefully it begins to change the minds, because that's the problem. Our minds are messed up. So we're at war for the minds of our people, and anything that I can do to help in that, I definitely do. You know, I support a lot of stuff, you know, that is that way. Like I said, I have no illusions about Atlanta. You know, in fact, I have some disappointments, you know, but I love the conscious community here. But the conscious community here is just like Milwaukee and other places. It's marginalized, it's small, but people, you know, come together and they, you know, deal with issues and put information out, you know, have a Kwanzaa program upcoming, of course, you know. So, hey, it's what we do. So,
yep. All right. Well, I'm going to start posting some of your podcast and redirecting more and more folks. You know.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very, very positive, very informative and educational. We need it.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't have that many vehicles. You know, black papers around the country are dying out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we got to morph into a new reality, a new medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And this is definitely one of them, and that's why I'm dedicated. I'm committed. I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, unless there's something happening, unless I'm involved in something. You know, I've dedicated myself to putting that to the side and doing this and doing the research. It's strictly African-centered. I ain't talking about nothing else. Everything else to me is moot. If you're talking about how can we as African people come together and do for self, that's the discussion that we're having. You know, very seldom do I even talk about the politics or talking about Trump or anything like that, you know, or sports. You know, I love sports, you know. Talk about sports all day, you know. But to me,
there's a connection there, you know, because, you know, I'm looking at, you know, what LeBron is doing. You know, he's investing in schools and stuff.
Yeah.
You know. They see, you know, he sent all his boys to college, mm-hmm. and they came back, you know, and you know, worked for him and worked to empower Black America, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, Milwaukee Bucks, you know, called off a game so they can protest.
Yeah.
So we need that kind of, you know, that's the kind of leadership we need.
Yeah, no
you
doubt.
Know, a total consciousness.
Yeah,
you
no
know.
Doubt. Well, I appreciate it. I do. I really do. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell damn it don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Biba Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. Have a good day.